Welcome back to the R-Rated Podcast. The R-Rated Podcast. This week's guest is... Welcome back to the R-Rated Podcast. Today's new guest is Andrew Reed, and we met on the show Fatal Attraction a couple months back. But before we jump into all of that, I want to take it back and ask you where you were born and where you're from. I know it's Jamaica, but I want to know some details, like what it was like growing up in Jamaica.
Nice. Yeah. No, I loved growing up in Jamaica.
Okay.
I was born there. I'm not going to say the year, but I'm not ashamed of my age. I'm 33. All right.
You're
but,
so young. Yeah. What?
Yeah. 1989. So born and raised, I lived there till I was 10 years old. And I mean, Jamaica is very much a piece of my identity.
Yeah.
Even though there's a term for people like me, it's a Jamaican. So it's
Jamaican.
Yeah. Jamaican American. Or they call us like yachties sometimes, like a Jamaican who left the yacht and never came back.
Yeah.
But that being said, you know, I found Jamaican community out here in LA. I've lived in LA for 9 years. Before that, I was in Florida for 14 years and then Jamaica for 10 years.
Oh, shit. Okay.
So Jamaica, Florida, California, beach, beach, beach.
Did you always know, like, I want to leave Jamaica eventually, like, when I grow up? Or was it, like, what happened? What sparked the, like, I want to... leave Jamaica?
Oh no, I had no say. So when I left when I was 10, you know, I think it was very much a decision of my parents, and they wanted my sister and I to have a better life, to have opportunities. Although Jamaica is a very beautiful country with great music, great food, and I feel like very warm people. I do think it has a lot of crime. It is very third world, you know. You do need to be aware of your safety.
Right.
And I think my parents grew tired of that lifestyle and didn't want that for my sister and I.
That's fair. Okay. So then you're in Florida. Where in Florida are you, like, were you living?
I lived in Miami for about two to three years. Yeah. So lived in Kendall 305.
Yeah.
And then I moved up to Gainesville, Florida, which is more like mid Florida, mid northern.
Yeah.
And I moved there because my sister got into a University of Florida and we weren't just about to have her go.
Right.
Because we were so fresh as immigrants.
Right.
Like, we wanted to stay together as a family. So I actually ended up going to high school and then myself, University of Florida, which is why such a long stint. Actually, Gainesville I lived in for about a decade.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what was, like, your high school experience? Like, was it, did you feel like it was easy to jump into it, or did you feel like, I don't know, not like an outcast, but you know, sometimes when you're the new kid from a new place, like, you gotta be scary sometimes and kids aren't always the nicest.
Yeah, no, it's I did actually feel like an outcast in the beginning of high school. I don't know if I started to find my identity in the middle of high school. And you know, when it came to school, like, you know, actually when I was in Jamaica, you know, my family, like, I went to a private school where three generations of my family like went there. So I felt I was very entitled, to be honest with you, when I was in Jamaica. I'm not gonna lie, I was a little bit of a bully. I'm not proud of it, but I will confess. And it was interesting because I was a little bit of a bully in Jamaica when I was going to school. But when I came to America, I was bullied.
What did it feel like to be on the other side?
Not good.
Not good.
Not good at all.
You know, don't bully.
I hope so. It did for me, with positive effects, because now being on both sides of the spectrum, when in high school, in the middle of high school, I started to find that community again. And, you know, one would say the more, you know, popular groups, I didn't really see it the same. You know, I saw people for people, and, you know, I was fortunate for my social groups, but I also knew the other side.
And so when did you decide, okay, I want to do something in film? Like, did you always have that, like, spark in you, or was it later on that, like, a certain movie or an actor, like, where did it come from?
I'd always been a cinephile, you know, even growing up in Jamaica. My mom used to take me to the movie theaters every weekend. So my mom was my film buddy.
I love that.
Credit to mom. And it was during college, really, that I found my passion for filmmaking. You know, as you know, I'm a filmmaker with a disability. I walk with a cane, and that is due to the fact that when I was 21, I suffered an injury where I was paralyzed due to a birth defect that I didn't know existed for 21 years of my life.
Wow.
and that was a AV malformation. And all an AVM is it's pretty much like being born with extra blood vessels.
Okay.
And because I was very athletic in college, you know, I was 21, senior year.
Of course. And you're tall, you have the height. Like, of course, you're gonna, I'm assuming maybe basketball?
Swimming.
Swimming.
Yeah,
oh,
swimming
okay.
was my thing.
Okay.
And tennis. And
oh, I love tennis. That's
cool. And it was due to my athletic nature, my muscle mass was large, larger than most, pushed up against these vessels in my back and popped them like an aneurysm. So,
oh my goodness.
Yes, very much a life altering injury that, you know, I was told I'd never recover from. I was a T3 complete paraplegic.
At 21 years old, you were told that you would never recover.
No, they told I would.
So celebrating like your big 21st birthday, you're getting this like huge life-changing news, right?
Yeah, well, it was right at, so it was after my 21st, so between 21 and 22, and it was during spring break, so it was kind of like about to graduate college, literally saying like, you know, the world is your oyster, this is the time of your life. And then, you know, I had this blow happen to me. And it was during my recovery, you know, I've been fortunate with my recovery to, even though they said I'd be a T3 complete paraplegic for the rest of my life, I've been fortunate.
And you literally walked in here and all you have is a cane, so that just shows you like, wow, your mindset is so much stronger. And like, just because someone tells you you can't do something doesn't mean that that's true. I feel like you proved so many stereotypes wrong, which is like amazing. And I want to hear more about that.
Yeah, I think I had luck on my side as well, in the sense as though I know, you know, my recovery is not the norm. You know, doctors tell you to be very wary of, you know, expectation, because I think so many people hope, you know what I mean, for their recovery, that they're not just loving themselves as they are. And I think we live in a very perfection based society, which I think has some toxic effects. But that being said, I have been fortunate, and I've gone from wheelchair to walker to crutches to one crutch to cane. But during that recovery, the first video I ever made where I decided to actually be a filmmaker, not just a cinephile, was when I was in the rehab, a hospital. I met people from all walks of life, diabetic, stroke patients, amputees, and I became very inspired by their stories. And one, you know, I mean, I'm bedridden or chair ridden rolling around, and I said, you know what, let me take advantage of this time. And I used my phone camcorder and interviewed all the other patients on my floor. And I stitched together their interviews as a thank you to the hospital for taking care of me and for taking care of us. And that was the first video like I created. And I've been creating ever since.
So you didn't even realize like this could be the new path of like directing when you were doing it, right?
No, it was just for fun. It was just for, as you know, I think you should never lose that beginning sense of fun, because, you know, I think in film, as you continue to grow in the industry, you realize there's a lot of politics. It's not necessarily about just talent. Nepotism, and, you know, resources. There's a lot of things that come into play, but you need to remember the beginning, why you're doing it in the first place, or I think you'll burn out pretty quickly in this 100%. Industry.
How did you like maintain such a strong mindset, like during something, during like probably one of the hardest times of your life, right? Especially at that point, like how did you not let that affect you so much? Like, cause I feel like a lot, like if, I don't know if that happened to someone else, I don't know if they could be so strong.
Well, you know, I don't know about strength, but I do know I wasn't alone. And I think that helped me a lot. I was in a relationship at the time, and you know, that definitely helped me. And I did have friends who had my back, brothers and sisters, who a family was there. I couldn't have done it alone. And nor do I think we should be expected to do things alone sometimes. You know, I think it's okay to ask for help. And 100%. I was a little stubborn in the beginning of doing that, but eventually I caved and I was like, I need help.
I think that's great advice. Asking for help, like that shouldn't be viewed as like, oh, like you're weak or you're like, you can't do it by yourself. Like, no, like, especially in a movie aspect, like that's a team effort. You're not doing it by yourself either. So That's a great skill that you have. So after interviewing everyone at the rehab, what was the next thing that you did?
I continued to make videos, you know. I mean, I was undergrad advertising, so I was still on that path. It hadn't become like a real thing. And I was doing it for funsies. Like, I ended up going to Europe and I made like a Euro video and like all very docu, like kind of just shooting. It wasn't until like I wouldn't even say I started financing for getting into the short film space and film festivals till film school.
Okay.
Because, like, after I graduated, I knew that I wanted to pursue film, but I didn't know, like, how to get in. I knew I needed to go to film school. I think some people need film school. I think others do not.
Right.
I needed film school.
Yes, I needed film school, too. But, like, I know so many people that are like, oh, I just learned it off of YouTube. Or, like, I just did it myself. I'm like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
So what film school did you go to?
I went to USC and I got my MFA there.
Nice. Can you tell me a little bit about the program? Like what's required? Are you always doing workshops and then you have to do like a short film at the end of the program? Or is it like, because I know every film school is a little bit different.
Yeah, you know, USC is a great film school. I learned a lot there. I, you know, got a tribe of artists who I continue to collaborate with today. I found more of my voice as a filmmaker at USC.
Yeah.
I will say my experiences were mixed.
Okay.
In the sense of like, I think sometimes when you go to a very competitive school like USC, there's there's a pressure.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes there's a competition. I think it depends on the cohort you're with. Unfortunately, some cohorts are a little bit more competitive and toxic than others.
Right.
So that being said, I did feel a little bit of that. But on the flip side, I did meet some amazing people. Mm-hmm. And I think USC also is like, it's kind of like a film studio. Like they're their own mini studio. Yeah. USC has, you know, specific content it's trying to produce out of its filmmakers. Mm-hmm. So I think there were some artists as well who not necessarily jived with that kind of like, you know, creative aesthetic.
Right.
Doesn't mean that they're not talented artists, but fortunately for me, my aesthetic was in line with the USC.
Did you have a graduating project for
I did, and that was like the first time that I fundraised and was like, you know what? Like I'd always been, I was a producing track. I still produce. You know, I like to consider myself just a director producer. I'm not a writer.
Because like sometimes it's always like writer director, but you're choosing more directing and producing, which great things to know. I mean, producing is like the business side, handling the money. So that's always good to know. How come you don't like writing? Because I feel like you have so much to tell.
I like writing, working with writers. I like sharing story. Like I have the idea, I have the world, but I need to I'm very much a collaborative filmmaker. You know, of course, there's certain things I micromanage, but when it comes to, I know it's a team sport, and I like to empower a writer to help bring their own take to an idea that I have that maybe it started with me, but it grows.
Yeah.
And that's every film, you know, then you hire your actors and then your actors give their take and you have to continue to, you know, manage the narrative through line, the creative through line, while also being okay with other people giving their creative
giving to their the feedback. Yeah, exactly. What was the project about?
So it was very, you know, my thesis, you know, so ultimately, so I was producing at USC up until my senior year, you know, the third year. And I was like, you know what? I want to direct. I want to make a thesis film.
Yeah.
Because I was wary about like producing, you know, money, economic, like, you know, stability and less weight on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. But like, directing is such a hard path. Like I was like, do I really want to go through this?
I question that like almost every day. I'm like, is this really it? Like, you know, it's not your typical, you know, 9 to 5.
But... Yeah, no, it's hard. And what happened is that I discovered what ultimately made me want to pursue fully directing was I found stories that I fell in love with that I couldn't walk away from, that I became obsessed with. And if you're a director, you understand that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it takes to be a director, because being a director is not rational.
No.
It's not, it's like, why?
Yeah.
But if you have like story that you're in love with, that you feel compelled that you have to tell, then I think you're on the path of being a director. And that happened to me. You know, Asia A was my thesis film. And you know, what that stands for is Asia stands for the American Spinal Injury Association.
Oh.
And my thesis is very much inspired by my own personal experiences with paralysis and the early stages. I think we overlook when patients are in rehab and just coming to terms with the fact that like you are, you know, gonna be in a wheelchair for the first time, accepting new realities, as one would say, in the very beginning. Usually you see them already at their home and they've adapted to some lifestyle. No, I want to see the adaption.
Right. How did they adapt? How did they get to that?
Yeah.
You're not like, okay, like, thanks for letting me know, right? It takes time.
You know, it's a journey and every recovery has a journey. And I think that's a very overlooked step in the films that I've seen.
Yeah, I actually saw your short film and it was really good. And it opened my eyes and I was like, wow, like it pulled on my heartstrings and it made me totally understand and feel exactly what the main character was feeling. And I was like, I get it. You know, I understand. And that's the beauty about directing. So I think you did an awesome job.
I appreciate that. Yeah. So, you know, knowing that story, but you know, V Sae, who was my, you know, we co-wrote Asia A together, the short, but she is the full writer on the feature.
Yeah.
And, you know, we created a story where I can provide the authenticity. And there are parallels to my story while very much make it a story that has universal themes.
Mm-hmm.
That regardless of disability, you understand what it's like to struggle with your self-worth, to struggle with shame, to struggle with your identity when, you know, life has, you know, given you curveballs you didn't expect. You know, it's not for me to weigh the hardship of others. We all suffer hardship.
Right.
And we need to respect that regardless of how heavy the weight may be.
Right. Yeah. Were there any moments when you were shooting that maybe were difficult to shoot because it's kind of parallel to your story, or did it feel almost like I need to do this. This is like a good feeling, like to get it out there. Like, what was it? Was it good or a little hard?
That's interesting. No, it wasn't. I didn't even flinch when it came to my personal experiences. Mm-hmm. I was disconnected enough from it. I think if you're that close, to the story, you shouldn't be directing it yet,
mm-hmm.
in all honesty, right. because that means you're not seeing objectively your direction.
Right.
You're still tied to your personal experience. Mm-hmm. I saw a short.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a story. I saw a character that, yes, I can talk to my actor and tell them my truth, but like, not me.
Mm-hmm.
Don't do what I, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
That's not me.
Right.
So it was very much business on set.
No, that's great. So did you submit it to film festivals? Like what happened with the film next?
Yeah, no, I mean, I was very fortunate with the success of the story. You know, I won the DGA Student Award.
That's amazing.
I was a semi-finalist for the Student Academy Award.
Woo, and, awesome.
Yeah, no.
So you saw it get screened. Did you get like a trophy? Like what?
Several. No, it did. It did well. But most importantly, I got an agent out of it as well. You know, it screened at CA Mobius. It screened at UTA.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, I started to foster relationships with the next step of my career,
mm-hmm.
which is like getting an agent, getting representation, taking out features, TV shows, you know, getting into trying to direct TVs to direct my first feature. And that's like currently the step I'm on now.
That's what you want to do as of right now is like TV or
it's both.
It's both.
Yeah. No, I have multiple feature projects that I'm developing.
Okay.
You know, the toughest thing with all these projects, well, the whole process is hard, but
right.
the one that we all get bumped on that usually don't get over the hump is the financing.
Right.
And that is where I am at with my features, all the while I am pursuing TV, which is very much, you know, the showrunner and the writers are more the leaders in that, but a director can come in and understand and, you know, learn from a showrunner their vision and be a part of the team and help execute their vision for their story.
Right. I know that you did the Paramount Directors Program also. How long after from your feature, after graduating like USC, how long after did this all happen and how did you even apply to that?
Yeah, so I got into the Paramount Viewfinder Directors Program in 2020. It's a 2-year program.
Okay.
And so I graduated 2018 from USC. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't know this about short films. It takes time to build accolade from them.
Mm-hmm.
The festival circuit is usually 1 to 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen just over. You finish the movie, it's not like, okay, it's out. Like,
you need to kind of like let it go and move on to the next thing.
Yes. I didn't realize that until like I started submitting myself to film festivals. Like, wow, it's kind of like a waiting game
for
a year or even longer.
Sometimes. And getting a lot of rejections, even though your project can be super successful. I mean, all my projects, even though, you know, we've gotten into festivals, which I'm very proud of, got a lot of rejection too. Rejection is a part of the game.
Yes. How do you handle rejection when it comes to like your film, especially when you, I mean, for me too, it's like, I always wonder how other people handle it because, you know, it's like something that you put all this effort and work and you have such positive and hope for it and like all these like good things, like, oh, making this project and then like somebody else doesn't maybe like it or I don't know. Maybe it's not even about maybe not liking it. It just maybe doesn't fit that festival. But how do you handle rejection?
Yeah, highs and lows. You know, I give myself a 24-hour grief period, and okay. then I move on.
That's great.
And I'm like, I might grieve this for 24 hours. Yeah. I give myself, you know, don't suppress it. You know, I don't think suppressing emotion is very healthy.
Therapy 101.
Yeah. But I will say, you know, you have to kind of get used to it mm-hmm. a little bit, mm-hmm. Or you won't make it.
Yeah.
Like, all the greatest filmmakers, I mean, for instance, like Steven Spielberg, one right. of the greatest of all time.
Right.
He never got into USC.
Right. Yeah. I didn't get into USC either.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, but does that define you or him? No. I mean, he's one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. Mm-hmm. So, just because you don't get into Sundance or Tribeca or South by Southwest does not mean... You know, AJ didn't get into Sundance, but I mean, it had massive success.
It won a ton of other awards. Yeah, exactly.
You know, or like vice versa, you know, say for instance, one of my latest shorts, I got the email personally from Sundance saying, hey, you know, you were close, but like, we couldn't get this one in. But then I get a call from Slam Dance saying, we want you.
Yeah.
And it's like, amazing.
Right. Okay. So it comes with being a director.
It comes.
Tough skin.
You do have to have tough skin.
How do you deal with, you know, maybe not having the budget for something? Like, are you fundraising? Are you reaching out to producers? All right, how does that happen for you?
Yeah, I mean, that's not one of the nice things about being a producer.
Right.
So
do you recommend as a director, you should also know with the producing side?
You should 100%.
Yes.
100%.
Yes.
I think here's the thing. Mm-hmm. Filmmaking, as much as we focus on the art, is a business.
Right, 100%.
And I think a lot of creatives struggle with the business side, or vice versa, business, and the creative side.
Right.
And if you're able to understand both, excel, of course, at your creative, mm-hmm. if you're going to choose that lane. But if you're able to understand both, you truly, I think, can navigate the industry a lot better.
Yes.
So say, for instance, I've shot 4 shorts now. I'm actually gearing up to shoot my 5th this summer.
Nice.
Fundraised
yeah.
and got grants and support and, mm-hmm. Applied to grants, art grants, in the US. And I've been and then I have like personal backers to the point that like, yeah, I have fundraised to, shoot my next short.
Amazing. Wow. Okay. Yeah. And then you also said earlier you have an agent and stuff. So does your agent, like, is it kind of like an acting agent where they're bringing you like, okay, this is a project where we think you'd be a great director, for this feature or this short? Or, like, what exactly is this agent doing for you?
So she's a literary agent. Okay. She's an APA, now IAG, mm-hmm. I think. I think it's merged with a different company.
Yeah.
But she is a literary agent in the sense that, like, for instance, the feature script. We have a feature mm-hmm. script for Asia A. Asia A is one of the, the projects that I'm taking out that I want to expand.
Right.
She takes the script out. She focuses on, like, the story. She, we send her, I send her treatments. I send her scripts. Mm-hmm. And then she sends that to production companies for me to get financing.
That's awesome. Let's talk about how you got onto Fatal Attraction. So you did the program in 2020, you said?
So 2020 to 2022. I just wrapped the program last month.
Okay, so after wrapping the... What are you doing in the program? And then, because after is when you went on set for Fatal, right?
During. So yeah. Oh, okay. So the program guarantees a shadow. You're matched with a brand in the Paramount, empire. So like, what is that? That's like, there's Paramount TV, there's Paramount, there's Paramount Studio, TV Studios, there is Awesomeness TV. There's a lot of brands under Paramount, and the 6 directors, we got matched with the brand where our creative aesthetic fit best.
Oh, okay.
So I got matched with Paramount TV, and one of the projects Paramount TV was producing was the Fatal Attraction TV show. Mm-hmm. So I had the opportunity to shadow Pete Chapman, mm-hmm. who, as we both know, is an amazing director,
yes.
who I learned a lot from, and I respect him a lot, not only as a filmmaker but as a mentor, in the sense that he didn't sugarcoat the experience for me.
And
I believe that he was championing me,
mm-hmm.
so
which is huge. Like, is that, I don't know if that's even that common, to have such a maybe great shadow experience or relationship experience with the person you're learning from. But that's awesome that happened. And how long was that, the shadowing experience?
I shadowed for pre-production and production. So I believe, how long did I shadow? Production was 3 weeks. No, production was, I think like...
almost a month, maybe.
It was like 2 to 3 weeks. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And are you literally like mimicking, not mimicking, but it's like, okay, we wake up at this time, meet you here. Like, You go over the shot. Like, what do you? What exactly were you learning in the shadowing class? Because you know how to direct, right?
So it's learning the formula of TV. You know, mm-hmm. the tone meeting. Exactly. A day on set of Fatal mm-hmm. was long, informative, grueling, awesome. I had a blast. Yeah. I mean, I loved getting to meet you and so many other fellow, you know, creatives yeah. and filmmakers, and just see the whole process. I mean, I have nothing but positive things to say about my experiences.
Great. That's awesome. And after Fatal, what did you do next?
What did I do next? I laid in my bed and I said, so what's next? Classic filmmaker, director.
That, right?
Because, you know, this is such an interesting industry. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. I know a lot of people, it's very easy to get angry and talk shit on our industry.
Right.
I think a lot of people do that. And I think Hollywood has a very bad habit of just complaining or whining or criticizing each other instead of empowering mm-hmm. each other to do better, to make great stories, to yes. give emerging directors, filmmakers, producers, writers a chance.
Right.
And not just relying on what they think is a sure thing. There is no sure thing in filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Filmmaking is art. Filmmaking is a team sport. Yes, it is also a business, but at the same time, it is a risk-taking endeavor always.
Right.
And you can have all the pieces supposedly aligned to yes. the greatest algorithmic success, and it still fails, because at the end of the day, it is art.
Right.
So that being said, I think we need to try and, you know, bring each other up mm-hmm. instead of keeping to criticize and bring each other down.
Mm-hmm. And how many projects do you try to direct or produce in a year, just to keep things going? And maybe if one doesn't hit the way that you thought, like, yeah, what do you think is a good amount of films to direct in a year?
Well, good question. At least one for me personally. I mean, hey, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. It costs money.
Exactly.
Cost time.
Do you always find, like, putting your own money into your project?
Every project. There is yes. not one project okay. I've not put my own money. I mean, yeah, I treat, you know.
I'm like,
you know,
am I the only one? I'm like, how does this work?
Yeah, no, my directing, it's very much a startup. It's yeah. very much, you're creating your own business. Mm-hmm. You're probably, you know, open your own company up eventually when you reach a certain level of success. Mm-hmm. But it is very much you're investing. And you're going to be in the red mm-hmm. for a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, thousands of dollars I've spent on my projects. And, you know, still, you know, not fully, you know, directing every single day like I'd like, but still very much on that trajectory. And every year gets better and better and
yeah.
more opportunities arise, you know. Mm-hmm. So post Fatal Attraction, it's like, so what's next? What's next right. is applying to all the, you know, for instance, I'm fortunate to be eligible for a lot of diversity programs.
Yeah.
I apply to all of those. I create my own opportunities by making shorts. Mm-hmm. I reach out to my friends. For instance, I just did a docu short for nice. On running shoes.
Okay.
It just, you know, it's literally looking under every rock, trying to find every opportunity, because as a director, you gotta keep directing. Yes. You could have a smash hit short that like went on the festival last year, but if it didn't lead to your feature,
right.
they're gonna be like, this year, so what
have you done? This year?
Even though you proved your worth.
Right.
Time and time again. So mm-hmm. it's not fair, but that is the way it is. And until you reach a certain level of success, ultimately you can't really, you know, change the road.
Right.
So you have to just have the patience to endure until, you know, hopefully by the time you've reached a level of success that you're not jaded and you can give back. So, you know, the next generation has it a little bit more easy, a little bit more accessible, and empowers our community more.
Yeah. How different is directing a TV show, you think, from a feature film or even short film? Because I know it's not the same. It's a little different.
Completely different. Yeah. So, you know, a director on a feature is,
yes.
you know, the head creative.
Right.
It's usually a project that, you know, they're obviously very close to. They mm-hmm. live with it from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
Episodic director, after they do their director's cut mm-hmm. on the edit of the episode, they're done.
I know.
They're not there for music.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, they're not there.
Wait, what?
They're not there for final cut. They're not there for color.
Yeah.
They're not there for any of that.
Yes.
They have come in. They've been tasked mm-hmm. with executing the showrunner's mm-hmm. vision for that episode, maintaining the tone, the color, the aesthetic that has already been established. Unless you're doing the pilot episode, and you're making sure that, you know, the train, which has hopefully been well oiled ahead of you,
mm-hmm.
Continues to run as smooth as it has been, or if it's been running chaotic, help get it back on track. So filmmaking is organized chaos. I think the more organized you are, less the chaos, the better leader you are, less the chaos, but there will be chaos always. Mm-hmm. And you need to learn to embrace the nature of the beast.
What type of films do you like to, like what genre do you gravitate towards?
I usually gravitate to untold stories in the world of disability, mental health, BIPOC community. If I'm not working on one of those, you're definitely always grounded in drama.
Yes.
I do play with genre. If I explore a social commentary that hits one of those themes, so say for instance, my past two shorts, one was like a horror comedy, but it explored Latinhood and like being a Latina.
Yeah.
And then my other one was like a space sci-fi thriller, but it, you know,
you got range. You're like, can't keep me in a box.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I like to have fun too. And I think genre is a great way to have a compelling story, but at the same time, maybe have a little message underneath. Message underneath always. I think sometimes we get, you know, I see a lot of stuff, especially in the festivals, where it's like message with a story, not story with a message.
Oh.
And to me, that's propaganda, and I don't like that. Yeah. So yeah, I always try to focus on the story for us, and then if we succeed at that, then we can say something.
What kind of director would you say you are?
I'm a commercial director. Okay. I want to create stories, and I do at the level I'm at, and want to continue to create stories that are widely accessible. Mm-hmm. That, you know, can screen in the theater, that people get excited to go to the movies again. You know, my favorite directors, you know, growing up are Steven Spielberg, Christopher Nolan, James Mangold. You know, these are all filmmakers who, you know, their work speaks for itself. I feel as though we've reached an age in filmmaking where it has to be like all out popcorn with zero intelligence or like an auteur indie artist driven piece. And I think in the 90s, like, you had like the Jurassic Parks, like Jurassic Park is like a great, you know, action adventure thriller, but at the same time it had messaging, but you know, it had philosophical themes.
Right.
I think Nolan does a good job of that too. The Dark Knight, it's so much deeper than a super, it's a crime heist, you know, like it has so much going on. Right. You know, popcorn prestige, you know,
about sequels and like movies that have already been done, but they're just bringing it back again. Like, for me, it's frustrating. So I'm like, can we see like new stories? Like, there's so many different stories to tell, and I feel like it's always the same, because it's like it'll do well in the box office, or like people will go because they already know of the story. Like, how do you feel about movies like that?
I'm over it. No, I'm totally over it. Yeah. I think there's a few franchises that are able to excel that are creating good sequels. Mm-hmm. But I would say, if I had to put a percentage off the top of my head, at least 80% of them shouldn't have a sequel.
Yes.
People aren't, there's a reducing returns on the box office. I think there's a renaissance of original stories out there if Hollywood would let it in and take the risks on the ones that, you know what, I'm not saying you to greenlight all of them.
Right.
You know, go
to get greenlit. I'm like, this made it?
Yeah.
I'm like, what?
Yeah, no, I'm not, I would still like to see more original content, but yeah.
Do you go to the theater often? I know everything's like on streaming now, which it's kind of hard for us directors, because like the whole reason why I got into like movies and all that is because I would go to the theater, and I remember like sitting there and like just being in awe with like what I was seeing on the screen and the whole experience of getting the popcorn and all that. And now it's a lot of things are just, you know, people will be like, oh, I'll just wait till it comes on the streaming platform, or it's convenient. Like, how does that make you feel?
I go to the theater every week.
Nice. Okay, support the theaters.
And I also think that, you know, if we put the work in, like, people go to theater. Like, I think Oppenheimer, for instance, is going to make a lot of money.
It's a Barbie movie, too.
A Barbie movie? Well, yeah, I will go to the Barbie movie. Or Nope, you know, if Jordan Peele. I think they're, you know, the filmmakers that you know are creating that elevated yet commercial content will drive people to the theater. So let's get more of it.
Yeah, 100%. Are you affected at all by the strike that's happening right now?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You know, I was attaching talent to one of my projects and I was pitching another project if I have a producer come on board, and you know, my writers are out there striking. I'm in full solidarity of the writers. And yeah, it has stunted, but I am a director producer, so I continue to do my own thing.
Right. I was going to say, like, what are you doing to stay active at producing? Yeah. That helps.
Yes, it does.
Do you see yourself starting your own production company in the future?
I do. I think I need to, you know, get to reach the level where I'm, you know, fully directing features, you know, TV episodes. And then once I've reached a position where, you know, I feel comfortable then I can start to help the next generation and open my own production company, not just for my content, but for emerging filmmakers as well.
What would you say has been your greatest challenge as a director?
Opportunity.
Mm. That's, Do you think LA is the spot for these opportunities? Like, do you think there's other parts in the world now that may be better with opportunities? Because, you know, I feel like a lot of people shoot in Europe or like just... LA is expensive. Like, everyone knows they like, you want to make movies here, so they upcharge everything. Everything's just like, like, do you still feel like LA is the best spot for movies?
I think it is one of the best spots. Mm-hmm. I think there's other spots as well. Mm-hmm. I think LA will always be one of the meccas.
Like the hub,
guaranteed. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that there's New York is great. Atlanta is great. Right. Globally, there's other places that are great where maybe the get barriers to entry are not as hard as Hollywood. Mm-hmm. No, it's not the only one. But it is one of, it'll always be one of the best.
Yeah. Okay, I have two more questions for you and then I'll let you go.
Okay.
What advice would you give someone that's starting off as a director?
Make mistakes.
Make mistakes.
Don't put the pressure on you to be perfect. No director is perfect. Every director makes mistakes. Go in there. Remember, I always go back to that mindset. Why are you doing it in the first place? Remember to have that fun about you. Know the weight of your role. Mm-hmm. You're the director. You are the team leader. Take that seriously. Mm-hmm. You're hiring a crew to work for you. Mm-hmm. Protect them. Mm-hmm. Protect your team. And, you know, just try your best. That's all you can do.
Thank you. That's great advice. And where do you see yourself in the next 10 years?
In the next 10 years, I hope I get to achieve everything we've discussed. I hope to be fully directing features, TV, and have my own production company where I'm not only championing my stories, but I want to champion emerging filmmakers specifically, first to second time directors. That is who I want to support.
You'll definitely do it. I mean, you're already on the right path, so I'm super excited to see all that happen for you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Is there any like website or, you know, maybe your Instagram if you want people to see your work or your, you know, your films? You can throw it out.
Sure, yeah. You know, so my Instagram is, you know, my last name is, you know, Andrew Reed. Mm-hmm. Last name spelled R-E-I-D. And my Instagram is at readthestory.
Awesome.
You know, and then my website is
where can we watch
readthestory.com.
Read the story. Okay. That's my brand. They're all on the website.
The ones that I can have, I say, Asia A is on there, and I don't have Blackout. Yeah, Asia A is for sure on there. The ones I can are out. Yeah.
Amazing. Well, we'll go check them out. I know I will. And thank you guys for tuning in, and I will see you guys next week. Thank you.